caught yourself using this phrase. I suppose I'm doing okay under the circumstances. Under the circumstances. All right, the next time you catch yourself saying those words, I want you to take your foot, and I just want you to kick that phrase right out of your vocabulary, because you have no business being under your circumstances. Even Jesus Christ, when he was being beaten and crucified and killed and buried, was not under his circumstances. In the middle of all that, he was destroying the works of the enemy. Colossians says he was making an open show of the enemy. He was literally looting the enemy's kingdom. And 1 John says, you are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because he who is in you is greater than he who's in the world. That's you. You are of God. Greater is the one who's in you than the one who's in the world. We're in a series that I unpacked last week called Just Do It, off the Nike slogan, but started with last week talking about the high ground of obedience and how it wasn't necessarily the most eloquent message I've ever given, but I felt like it was one of the most significant ones I've ever preached. Because if we get that settled in our heart that Jesus Christ is worthy of our obedience, there's a whole lot of perspective that clears up all around us. Because there's always stuff going on in the world, but he has a way through the stuff, and he has a way out of the stuff. There's always a way in Christ. He doesn't leave us. He doesn't abandon us. He doesn't leave us orphaned. He doesn't leave us slaves to fear. And he's always got a way out. And it's a matter of listening for his voice and having a heart to obey. Someone said, why would God tell us what he wants us to do if we don't have a heart willing to obey anyway? And so that's the key thing from last week, is that surrender, which is or that obedience, that's an indication of surrender. And we can't surrender if we don't trust. But if we trust him because we know that he's good. And those are the things we need to get settled. This week I'm going to take just do it in a different way, and I'm going to talk about making stuff happen. And I want to look at two people today who were never under their circumstances. They were not under their circumstances. They operated in a way that revealed that they came out from under them and got above them. And they made stuff happen. And I want you to open your heart to think about something a bit different than you may have ever thought of it before. But in Mark chapter 5, it's going to be the story of two people who came out from under their circumstances and had miracles happening. And we're going to take a look at each one. In Mark chapter 5, it says, now when Jesus had crossed over again by boat to the other side, a great multitude gathered to him, and he was by the sea. Now, I don't know what it means by a great multitude. It doesn't say how many. But when Jesus, I mean, we look at just how many times he fed multitudes, it was usually in the thousands, right? I mean, it was 4,000 on one occasion, another time 5,000 men, not counting women and children. So we're talking lots of thousands. And it says there's a multitude was there gathered to him as he's getting out of the boat. In verse 22, and behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet, begged him earnestly, saying, my little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her that she may be healed and she will live. So Jesus went with him, and a great multitude followed him and thronged him. Now a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years and had suffered many things from many physicians. She had spent all she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, if only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well. Immediately, the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd and said, who touched my clothes? His disciples said to him, you see the multitude thronging you, and you say, who touched me? And he looked around to see her who had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. While he was still speaking, Some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher anymore?" As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Don't be afraid, only believe." And he permitted no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. And he came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue and saw a tumult and those who wept and wailed loudly. And when he came in, he said to them, "Why make this commotion and weep? The child isn't dead, but sleeping." And they ridiculed him. But when he had put them all outside, he took the father and the mother of the child and those who were with him. And they entered where the child was lying. Then he took the child by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kumi," which is translated, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." Immediately the girl arose and walked, for she was 12 years of age, and they were overcome with great amazement. And he commanded them strictly that no one should know it, and said that something should be given her to eat. One setting, crowds of people, two healings, two miracles. Who is directing the ministry and steps of Jesus in this setting today? Who's directing him in that day? And I know you can say, well, Jesus is directing his own steps. No one tells him what to do, right? He's deciding where he goes. But I want to ask you to look at this in a little different way. Or you could say, well, the Father, he only does what he sees the Father doing. But here's what I want to get into today. He just gotten out of a boat. Thousands are, it says in verse 24, thronging him. They've got him literally, he's getting out of the boat onto the shore. He's pinned against the shore, so to speak, moving, I'm sure, on the slow side of things to get through. And why are all these people there? I mean, are they there for some nice lecture? Are they there for a good teaching? Are they there for some entertainment? No, these are people who are living a hard life. It's a difficult time in Palestine. It's a difficult day in which they live. I would guess that people were there because they had issues and problems, and they thought, here's somebody who can help me. This, I believe this man can help me. There's there in the thousands wanting help from Jesus Christ. So think about the situation for a moment. Here's a man so doggedly determined to get help for his daughter, who he says is dying, that he plows through this crowd and somehow clears out enough space to throw himself at Jesus' feet. He's made a decision. And when he gets to Jesus, he says the decision. He declares what that decision is. Here's what's the conviction of his heart. He says, "Lay your hands on my daughter and she'll be well." I know this to be true. Now let me ask you something. Who do you think is directing the ministry of Jesus at that moment? Nobody wants to talk. This one man. Because it says that when he made his decision, she was sick and dying. Jesus doesn't say anything. He stops. And he turns. And he starts following the man. Was that on his to-do list when he got out of the boat? Something turned the direction Jesus was walking. And what turned him, sure, it was I'm sure there was a green light from the Father saying, yeah, follow. But what was it that turned the green light on was the faith of this man, the determination of this man to make something happen. He believed so deeply in his heart that if Jesus Christ will just touch my daughter, she'll be well. And because he believed it so deeply and so surely, he went after Jesus with all his strength to get through these thousands of people, to clear out a space, to throw himself at his feet and say, "Would you come with me? If you'll just lay your hands on her, I know she'll get well." He wasn't living under his circumstances. The circumstances motivated him to press into Jesus Christ with greater fervor than ever. And he pressed through. He conquered even more bad news, because even after that, he knew his daughter was dying, and then there's more bad news comes along the way. She was sick and dying. Then the news comes, oh, sorry, she's dead. So his conviction conquered even more bad news. His conviction conquered hopelessness. It's like, what's the, you know, there's other people here that need help more than you now. Come on. The voices are screaming at him. It's hopeless. Give this up. She's dead. It's too late. But he's not living under his circumstances. Second miracle that happens in this story is the woman with the issue of blood for 12 years. For 12 years, she was living, maybe you could say she was living under the circumstances in some sense. That certainly they're impacting her, and certainly our circumstances impact us and affect us. But something happened where her faith rose up to come out from under them and take him to the King of the Jews. For many of us, for many Christians, faith is a passive experience. Well, what will be, will be. Don't say those words in my hearing. I can't stand those words. Indifference is norm for a lot of people. Many people are no longer pursuing God's best for their life because their faith is a passive faith. I believe in God. I believe he's real. I believe in his son Jesus. I believe he died for me. I believe he rose again. And then what will be, will be. There was a commercial out years ago when I was a kid. It was about this vegetable juice called V8. And someone would drink a soda or some other kind of juice or something, and then somebody would pop open a V8, and they'd say, "Wow, I could have had a V8. Now, I have to tell you, that commercial was so powerful. Obviously, I still remember it after decades. It was so powerful, I, who had never had a V8 in my life, said, "That looks really good." So I went and got a V8. I about puked. I thought, who drinks this stuff? Just thinking about it, I can still taste it. Decades later, I know how bad it is. You know, but the point is, the point of the commercial was, you're missing out on something. You're settling for something for less. Now, it was a lying commercial, actually. It was full of lies. It was, this is better. No, it should have been, you know, wow, I could have had a ginger ale or something. You know, it should have been something else. But anyway, the Gospels let us know that if we want all that Jesus has for us, we need a faith that presses in. A faith that presses in. A faith that makes stuff happen. A faith that's willing to fight for what we need. A faith that says, I want to change something in this world. Jesus said, "Pray, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." He didn't invite us to do that because our prayers make no difference. He invited us to do that because our prayers can make a difference. Our prayers do make a difference. We can change the world. We have a name on the front of our classroom for the elementary age kid, World Changers. I want us all to be world changers. I want us to have faith, a faith that changes the world, a faith that gives away our favorite Bible with notes and highlights in it and personal study things that says, but I'm doing this by faith because I'm fighting to make a difference. So this lady with the issue of blood, she has a faith that moves God's hand. To move God's hand, I'm going to give you several points that I see from her story. To move God's hand, first of all, we must push through the feelings. If anyone had an excuse to stay home, it was her. She was literally dying slowly. It had been happening for 12 years, but she's literally losing her blood. It's debilitating. It's weakening. But she isn't letting her feelings keep her from reaching out to the one who could heal her. I've had people say, I'm sorry I didn't get to church Sunday, Pastor. I had this really bad backache that morning. I'm like, okay. You could have come and had somebody pray for you. But no. Now, you know, if anybody had a reason to stay home, it was this lady. But she, her faith and our faith has to push through our feelings at times. Secondly, to move God's hand, we got to press through disappointments. The Bible says this. It says she had suffered many things of many physicians. Now, I don't know if you've ever changed doctors before. This lady changed doctors a lot. How hard would that be to take? A physician giving you hope. Oh, I've got the trick here. I've got the key to your health. I know what we can do. I know what we can try. Let's do this for 12 years. That's some disappointment. But she wouldn't let that disappointment get between her and the Lord. Her faith pushed through the disappointment. And if we want to move God's hand, we've got to have a faith that moves through our feelings, our disappointments. And third, to move God's hand, our faith has to push through hopelessness. She hit bottom in not just her health, she hit bottom in other ways. Her finances were gone. That's rough. But sometimes when people lose all their money, then they start turning to the one who can give us things that money can't buy. Fourth, faith that moves God's hand persists and presses through shame. Problems have a way of making you feel ashamed. Just acknowledging your problem sometimes can make you feel ashamed. I think one of the most severe cases of that on one extreme was when someone said to me one time, I've tested positive for HIV. And then they burst into tears. It was the pain, the fear, the shame, all wrapped into one. But just saying the words, I have something, I have a problem. Just saying the words, I'm struggling with, you know what? I read something a while back that one of the major reasons men don't come to church is the shame they feel about porn. They can't bring themselves to come into the house of God because of this dark shame they're carrying inside. And so it's enough to get the courage to come into church carrying that. But I've had men come to me and say, I need you to pray with me. And it's something they've been struggling with sometimes since boyhood. Come to me and say, I'm struggling with porn. Bam. The shame. This woman, man, the shame of her issue. Legally, she wasn't allowed to come out in public with this. But her faith pressed through the shame. Tell you, the devil will use shame to make you feel unworthy. And you need to let the devil know that your worth isn't based on yourself. It's only based on what Jesus Christ has done for you. It's his grace that makes us worthy to come to his presence and ask for anything. You got to push through the shame. Fifth, to move God's hand, sometimes you have to press through the crowd. What do I mean by that? I'm not just talking about a physical thing here. The man, Jairus, pushed through a crowd. She pushed through a crowd to touch him. If I can just touch him amidst these thousands, if I can just touch him, I know I'll be healed. But sometimes other things crowd our thoughts. Sometimes when you have a certain level of passion for Jesus Christ and there's others around you who don't, it's hard. You got to push through that to follow. It's easy to pull back. And it's especially tough on spouses when your spouse isn't as hungry for God as you are. It can be tough. You got to kind of push through the crowd, so to speak. You're being awful quiet this morning. But when the people closest to you don't have the same push, you know, these two pushed through thousands who had needs, and everybody has needs, right? But they pushed through more than the others. That takes effort. That's tough sometimes. It's why, by the way, you don't want to start a marriage that way. If you can avoid it, if you're not married yet, don't start it that way, for goodness sakes. And if you're in a marriage, then listen, keep your focus on the Lord, get your strength from Him, get your joy, your peace from Him, so that you're not putting pressure on the guy or the girl. God's hand is on your spouse when you're believing. Or the pushing through the crowd can be something as simple as, look at all these people. Everybody has needs. Certainly there's other people that have worse situations than I have. Why should I push through? Look at all these needs. Why should I press into God? Other people need His help more than I do. Have you ever thought thoughts like that? I'll bet there was people in this crowd that had worse issues than these two. Worse. I almost passed English in high school. Faith that moves God's hand presses in. And it presses through. And it presses in several ways. It presses in by responding to what we hear. You know, what you hear often determines the outcome, what you're listening for. There's lots of voices out there. Which one are you listening for? Are you listening for the voice of Christ? Are you listening for His Word? Are you listening for what His Spirit is saying? Or are you listening to all the voices around you? 12 years she'd heard wrong things, negative things, hopeless things. But she heard about Jesus, and she listened to that. You got to respond to what you hear. Secondly, you got to be bold enough to declare what you believe. She spoke what she believed in her heart. If I can just touch Him, God is going to heal me. She wasn't denying her issue. That's what some people like to think. Oh, maybe I'll deny my problem. No, don't deny your problem. But declare that God is greater than your problem, because He is. It's time to let His Word take root in our lives. And apply it to the way we talk. And now, she wasn't even talking to others. She's talking to herself. And your number one cheerleader in your walk with the Lord needs to be yourself. Because other people will fail you. Thank God for the encouragement of others around us. But people will fail you. Your number one encourager always in your walk with God has to be yourself. And she's talking to herself. She's saying, I know if I get there, I'll be healed. I know, as she's bumping this one aside and pushing through those two. I know if I get there, I'll be... Who's she encouraging? Herself. She's not talking to them either. She's talking to herself. She's talking to her own soul. We've got to be bold enough to declare what we believe. Third, we got to be... A faith that moves God's hand has got to be moved to action. That faith she had demanded she get out of bed, whether she felt like it or not. She put her actions with her words. And with her beliefs. In fact, her faith didn't even demand that Jesus touch her. Her faith demanded that she touch Him. She touched Him. Again, wasn't on His to-do list that day. I think I'll find a woman with an issue of blood for 12 years and I'll heal her. It wasn't on His list. She made stuff happen with a faith that pressed through. Faith that moves God's hand presses in until the root of the problem is dealt with. She didn't come for just a little relief. She came to get the whole thing healed. to get the root of it healed. I don't know whether your issues are physical, emotional, spiritual, but God is able to heal the root of every one of them. It might mean changing some life patterns of how you live to get to those roots, but he can do it. And it strikes me that heaven notices when breakthrough comes. Jesus stopped when her breakthrough came. He stopped. The crowd stopped. Heaven stopped to notice something has happened here. Now contrast that with another story. I'm just going to touch on it briefly with how some people in Jesus' hometown affected his ministry. He went to his hometown of Nazareth, and some people there affected his ministry there. It says in Mark chapter 6, it says, he went out from there and came to his own country, and his disciples followed him. Verse 4, but Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his own country, among his own relatives, and in his own house. There had been, it says in there that there was, they had little faith. Now he would, verse 5, now he could do no mighty work there. Hear that. He could do no mighty work there, except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and healed them. They moved Jesus' hand too, didn't they? They moved it the other way. He was willing. They moved it through their unbelief, their hardness of heart. He's in the midst of these people, but they rejected him. But for the woman with the issue of blood, for Jairus, just getting to one touch, just one touch. If I can just get to him, if I can just get to him, I know God can turn this all around. My shame, my disappointment, my hopelessness, the situation, the problem, he can turn it all around. Who made those happen? Who made those things happen? Those two made them happen. How many of you want to make stuff happen for God? Lori, would you come? I'm going to ask the altar ministry teams if you'd come. Do you have a just do it kind of a faith? Do you have a I'm going to press through kind of faith? Do you have a make it happen kind of faith? Do you have a kind of faith that says, I'm going to make it happen on earth as it is in heaven? All right. There's a story in John chapter 2. Mary, the mother of Jesus, made something happen. Heard a message on this a few years ago that just gripped me. But it was about how we can make things happen with our prayer life. It was on the third day there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Now both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding, and when they ran out of wine, the mother of Jesus said to him, they have no wine. That's a problem. And the fact that she said it meant that she probably had some kind of historically, most scholars think that means that she had some responsibility for this reception. She was managing it in some way. And she goes to her son and says, they have no wine. Listen to Jesus' words. Woman, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour has not yet come. Jesus said, my hour hasn't yet come. And his mother said to his servants, whatever he says, do it. Jesus said, it's not my time. Jesus gets his orders from the Father, right? He said, I do what I see the Father doing. That's where I get my orders. He says, it's not time yet. I know what will happen. If I start doing miracles, it's going to be a quick, sudden slide to the cross. And it's not time yet. What does Mary say? I'm not having it. I'm not having it. I know who you are. I know who you are. I gave birth to you, young man. I went through the shame of being pregnant out of wedlock with you because I know who you are. and I'm not hearing it. I've waited long enough. We don't need wine tomorrow. We need it now. She turns to those guys and says, whatever he says, do it. Now there's Jesus. He's caught in the middle. Dad? It's not time yet. It's not supposed to start yet. This woman, she wants to start it now. She's being pushy. She's pushing my buttons, Dad. Mary made something happen. Changed the course of history right there with a faith that pushed through. I mean, imagine praying and having Jesus say no. Come on. It's one thing when you hear nothing. But when you hear him in his own voice say, nope. To have the gumption to say, no. I know who you are. Listen, do you know who he is? Do you have enough relationship with him? Do you have a close enough relationship with him to push through even this? To say, stay closer to him than we started it. We can end next week closer than we started. We can develop a relational equity, if you will, to where we can press through all of those things. How many of you want that? Let's stay. Got an issue that's literally draining the life out of her. Our issues isn't that what they do? They kind of drain the life out of you when you have something really challenging. It just drains the life out of your thinking. It just pulls you down. It could be a financial issue. It could be a physical one. It's literally draining your health. It could be a marriage issue. Something's out of order. When I use the word issue now, it could be an issue with drugs or alcohol. It could be a sexual issue. It could be jealousy, anger, bitterness, unforgiveness. It could be hate. Listen, God's not a respecter of persons. He can minister to this woman with the issue of blood. If he can minister to Jairus, touch his daughter, bring her back from the dead, he can minister to you and I. He's not a respecter of persons. He's a God of miracles, and he still does them. Hallelujah. He wants to push through, press in. Pastor, maybe you got to press past the person sitting to your right or left and get out of the aisle and come on up and let one of these teams pray for you. That would be just a small thing compared to what these two did. I want God to minister this situation. I believe my faith could change circumstances. You believe that? Come on. Somebody in here ought to have a need worth getting out of your seat and coming on up. Jesus is the answer. But if we don't push through the opposition, we're not gonna get it. You can be at a buffet line and have all this great food looking at you. But if you won't chew it. Swallow it. It's not going to strengthen you. It's not going to help you. You got to make some effort. Don't be a passive Christian. Don't be a passive Christian. Come on. Go after it. God loves you. Father, thank you for your love. Thank you that you care about the issues of our life. Everyone, every issue that's draining the life out of us, draining the hope in some cases. Maybe we've got a line of problems. That first one in line, Lord, right now, for each one, the first one, we thank you that you're more than able to conquer. Thank you. Thank you, God. God is so good. There's other... There's refreshments in the lobby. You can stay as long as you like. This area up here will just be a place of ministry. If you want to come up for prayer, we'll be here. We'd love to stand with you. Just pray a blessing over you. God bless you.